Welcome back to Open Source Startup Podcast. As usual, this is Tim from Essence VC and our lovely co-host, Robbie from Cowboy Ventures. We're super excited to have the founder of Rising Wave Labs, which is Yingchun. It's the open source streaming database. So welcome, Yingchun.
Hi, Tim. Hi, Robbie. Thanks for having me here. And I'm Yingchun Wu, and I'm the founder of Rising Wave Labs. So this is a stream processing company, and we build open source streaming database.
Awesome. We are thrilled to have you here. And for anybody who listens to the podcast, I know we like to start all the way back at the beginning. So why don't you tell us about the founding story and where the idea came from for Rising Wave?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, I started a company 3 years ago. And before starting a company, I was at AWS Redshift, the data warehouse, right? And prior to that, I was at IBM Research Armadin doing the research in the database group. And I also did my research in stream processing and the database systems. And I obtained my PhD from National University of Singapore. So, I mean, while I was working at Redshift, I feel that, okay, look, well, it's definitely pretty amazing technology, right? And it's one of the world's best data warehouse system. But well, such kind of technology can only be used to process a batch data. But for a lot of use cases, it's like, okay, people need to gain real-time insights from the real-time data. But if we want to use some technology like Redshift or products like Redshift or Snowflake, it will end up like, okay, you have to run the query for hours or even days, right? It will consume a lot of resources without delivering the results. So what I'm thinking here that okay, whether we can build something new. And that's why I started thinking about, okay, whether we should build a company. So yeah, definitely there are a lot of tools, but I feel that okay, none of these tools will work. And it's not more than enough. And we have to think about, okay, whether we should build something new for the cloud and for the modern engineers. So that's why I founded this company.
One thing I definitely noticed, and you mentioned your history about Redshift and Alameda Research, right? These are databases, right? And used in many different places. But definitely you're working on real time, which probably more ties to your PhD work, I suppose. Maybe talk about your motivation. Why build a new streaming database, right? And we really want to unpack that. I don't think we've seen a streaming database, right? And so talk about why, even though you think this is new, what do you think the world needs this? Some of the story, how that motivates you to start with, and then what have you trying to do in the beginning to get this started?
Well, definitely is kind of relevant to my PhD thesis. Well, my PhD thesis was about the database systems and the stream processing. So definitely I'm not trying to claim myself as an expert, but I've already done a lot of research in this domain. But I have to say that I don't really think that the concept of streaming database is new. I have to say that the concept is actually pretty old. If you check the history of stream processing, and then we have to probably go back to 20 years ago at around probably 2000 or 2002. And at that time, there were only database systems. There were no stream processing systems. And database systems like Oracle, IBM DB2, and Microsoft SQL Server hasn't been there, right? And there are probably also data warehouses like Teradata. But at that time, people were thinking about, okay, I have the database system and I want to do some real-time monitoring application. Can we do that? Can we do that inside of the database system? So there was a research paper. I forgot the title of the paper, but well, it was from MIT, Brown, and basically some universities saying that, okay, we actually have to build a new kind of system, new kind of database system to supports real-time monitoring application. And then this kind of database is called a stream database. So that's why people started building streaming database. And that was 20 years ago. But if you check the timeline, right, we're in around 2004, Google published a paper called MapReduce and saying, okay, we should do big data. We should not use Oracle. We should not use DB2. We should just do computation, right, at large scale, 1,000 machines, right? So at the time, people started thinking about, okay, no, I don't really need a database. I have to use a big data system. And for the stream processing guys, we'll think about, okay, let's do not just build a stream processing functionality inside of the database system. Let's build something on top of, let's say, or using the so-called the MapReduce paradigm, right? So that's why people started building systems like Apache Storm and then Apache Flink and then Apache Spark Streaming, right? And there are some other projects like Apache Samza, right, built by Linkin. So there are so many stream processing systems coming out over the last probably 20 years. But I feel that, okay, this was pretty cool technology and it does solve the problem. It does solve the big data problem. But the time has already evolved and the time flies. And now we are actually in the cloud era. Everything is about the cloud. And we actually have to build something for the cloud. And more importantly, from the engineer's perspective, things also changed. 20 years ago, we need to learn a lot about the fundamental stuff, right? We're like, okay, how do we code in Java? How do we code in C++? But nowadays, it's like, okay, no, I don't need to think about like how programming map and how I write a map function and how I write a reduce function. The only thing I need to do is that I only need to think about how to write a SQL, right? And also, I don't really want to have so many components. I don't really want to have a Hadoop plus HDFS, right? But these are two different sets of systems, right? I just want to have one single system, like either Snowflake or Redshift, right? Where this is a single system that have both the computation and the storage functionality. So what I'm thinking about, okay, look, people need this, but existing systems like Redshift and Snowflake are all for batch data. Should we build something so-called new, but it's a pretty old idea, right? So should we build something new for the cloud and for modern engineers? And that's why I built such a thing called the Riding Wave.
Awesome. I have heard from many other investors that have spent more time investing in databases, but also from customers, just how hard it is to build a new database because you have to develop so much trust with users. It's such a core piece of infrastructure. And I imagine that open source had a lot to do with building that early trust for you all. But how did you think about that? Because and like, where did you start when you thought about, okay, like we need our users to trust us to build a brand new database? Like what were some of the things that helped you kind of get there early on?
Well, I have to say that's where it's definitely pretty hard. And if you ask me to start again, probably I will not start a database company. I probably will start an AI company, right? It's like, okay, I the only thing I need to do is to invoke an OpenAI API, right? But anyways, well, 3 years ago when we started a company and I didn't really think too much about I know that's where definitely people have to build, we have to build a trust, but I didn't really think too much about that. After passion and back to my PhD, I had experience building database from scratch. So I believe that's okay. I can do it again, right? So that's probably one of the main motivations. But well, I'm not a guy that's always try to start everything from scratch. I'm not that kind of guy. And I also think about, okay, whether we should build something on top of the existing project. I actually tried DuckDB, right? Well, I actually also tried with Flink and the ClickHouse. And I was thinking about, okay, whether we can build a system on top of this existing beta tested systems, right? I did that and I tested, but I feel that, okay, I mean, we cannot do this because, well, if we do this, well, I mean, at the very beginning, probably it's easier for us to gain some customers. But the problem here is that, okay, after that, after first phase, we have to still face the situation that, okay, we have to modify the code, which can take pretty long time, right? And we also have to build a brand, right? Otherwise, what people will think about, okay, you are something like, okay, yet another modified project, right? A better DuckDB or better ClickHouse or better some Flink, right? Well, it doesn't really make sense for us. So we decided to build a system from scratch. And at the very beginning, it was definitely pretty hard for us to build a trust because nobody will trust a new database system, right? And every time people would come to us and they are probably pretty interested about the technology, but they will ask about, okay, who is your customer, right? Who uses this system? And is there any big companies using your product? And at the very beginning, we have to say no. We don't really have such kind of customers, right? We probably have already talked to these companies, but none of them were using our stuff, right? So at the very beginning, we started pitching some startups. Because for startups, I mean, they are startups and they know how hard it is to build a startup, right? So we build a trust by actually providing free support to these customers and the free support to these startups. Because, I mean, for these startups, if they want to use something like, okay, Snowflake or Databricks or whatever, right? Well, it is too expensive. And even if they pay for such kind of services, they actually have to pay additional money for the so-called on-call support, right? The online support. It's kind of very expensive. But for us, well, it's like, okay, I will help you to build the entire system. And probably at the beginning, you probably don't need to pay me anything. The only thing you need to give us is that, well, okay, your feedback. And we can also provide a free support for you, right? If the system crashes, then we can provide instant support. And that's how we acquired the first few customers. Actually, the first, I think it's the first customer is actually a startup, but now the startup is growing and it's in the fintech domain. And the startup is growing pretty well and they have a pretty solid community. It's not open source, but they have a pretty solid community and they also earn a lot of money from their business. And we also get benefit from such kind of, them, right? But these early adopters.
Walk us through your journey of deciding, because I think we hear streaming database and I feel like this world is sort of catching up what that really means. So obviously it's not a new concept, like you mentioned technically, but from a broad user base, like probably more people have looked at, you know, the things you mentioned on your alternatives, which is like Flink and Spark or something else. And so where did you start? When you say, I want to build a new stream database, where was the place you started with a project? How did you learn feedback from users? And what did you learn in the early days of designing this in the first time? Who gave you quality feedback? How did you go find your early users? And what are the challenges back in the day to get this off the ground?
I think, we have a few early adopters probably 2 years ago. And I think that we got most of the insightful feedback from the experts. I mean, some experts that are familiar with Flink and familiar with some alternatives, stream processing systems. And they are experts and they know what they need, but they don't really have the bandwidth and they don't really have the money to pay for the service, to pay for the like a manager Flink or right, was such kind of service. So they come to us and they can tell us, okay, what kind of functionality they need and what kind of SLAs they need. And definitely we gain a lot of very useful insights from these customers, from early adopters. We also had another set of early adopters who is actually not very familiar with stream processing. And they just think us like, okay, a database that can produce real-time results. That's what they think. We also definitely learned, but what we learned was more about, okay, how to educate the customers. How do we educate the customers what is streaming database? But I don't really think we really gained a lot of, insights from how they use that system. Because for their use case is kind of simple, right? So as long as the system is kind of stable, right, well, they will not complain. But I have to say that I don't really want to educate their customers. I'm not a guy always trying to pitch my software or the idea, because well, I think it's too expensive. I mean, at an earlier stage, well, I do believe that okay, we can pitch some of our customers, especially pitch to experts, for example, if they have already used Flink, and then we can tell them, okay, what's wrong with Flink? They also know that what's wrong with Flink, right? Well, we just tell them, okay, how we solve the problem. Okay, I know that we have certain A, B, C pinpoints, right? And how we can tackle this problem. And you can come to us and probably we can help you to fix these problems. We can definitely educate these kind of users because they are experts. But after this stage, well, I don't really think that it makes sense to educate our customers because well, there are too many customers to educate, right? For every single customer, I probably can't spend an hour or probably 2 hours or probably even a day, but how many hours I have to educate customers? So essentially we changed our slogan. I mean, at the very beginning, we just said, okay, it's just, streaming database, but gradually we tell people that, okay, no, we're not just a streaming database. Oh no, you don't need to learn what a streaming database is. You probably just need to learn, okay, stream processing. Oh, probably have you ever heard of Flink? Or probably have you ever heard of KCDB? If you heard of this database, and then probably you will hit such a pain point A, B, C, and then we are alternative. And if you come to us, and you will probably get a better solution, right? Or probably cheaper, or probably more cost efficient, or probably much easier to use, right? But some customers probably never heard about, okay, what a Flink is, or what is a SAML is, what a KCDB is. Probably just heard about, okay, what is a database. Then we will tell them, okay, look, we build a better materialized view, which is a real-time materialized view. You can just offload some of your workload from your Postgres to our database, and we help you to compute do computation and do a compute real-time materialized view. So that's basically how we pitch the customer. So to conclude, I think that we, instead of telling people a new concept, or the better way is to tell them, okay, how, what kind of problem we can solve. That's a way we reach out to customers. Yeah.
Dad, I'd love to double click on how you actually find those users. So you're looking for users that are like maybe Flink users. They're already seeing pain points. They already buy into stream processing. How did you actually tactically go after them? Was a lot of it content? Was it like, just because I think that's the stuff that a lot of other founders struggle with, is like they figure out who their ideal early startup user profile is, but then how to actually get in front of them is a challenge.
Yeah. Okay. So, okay. I have a lot of experience to share with. I mean, definitely we created a lot of contents, right? Well, if you check my LinkedIn and or probably check my website, well, we actually produce a lot of articles. But actually, at the very beginning, I definitely talked to a lot of my friends, right, who is working in big companies. And for these companies, they probably have already used some of the solutions, right? Like either like Flink or probably like KCODB, they have already used that. And I'm not trying to persuade them to just remove their entire Flink cluster and move to RedingWave. Well, I didn't really do that. What I told them is that, okay, look, you have the Flink, but the problem here is that Flink is so difficult to debug. And then, but for us, well, it's like a streaming database, and we actually, it's much easier to use, and it's Postgres compatible. So as long as you know how to use Postgres, you know how to use RedingWave. So for small jobs, probably just want to do some scripts, right? Well, write some simple jobs. And for such kind of jobs, you don't need to use Flink. You can just use RedingWave to test your SQL. And if you're happy with the results, you can move the job to Flink. And in this way, we essentially, at a very early stage, I think probably 2 years ago, we actually entered some big companies just as a testing service. And it was never used in production. But well, they are pretty happy with the results because well, they know the expectation. Okay, these guys, I will not move my existing system to a new system, which is not better tested. But I still got, from the engineer perspective, I still got the benefits from a new system, right? And that's how we first started. But after that, well, I mean, my friends, well, I definitely have a lot of friends, but yeah, my friends can provide a lot of help, but we can just not just okay, sell the product to our friends, right? And then we generate a lot of content. We generate a few pretty popular contents. A very important one was a blog about okay, why we rewrote our project in Rust, why we converted from C++ to Rust. And I think for that blog, we got in total probably a million clicks. It was pretty impressive. And it got a lot of attention from the Rust community. I'm also pretty impressed by how vibrant the Rust community is, right? There are a lot of companies interested in Rust, and especially, let's say, FinTech, Web3, or even operating system. Yeah, those kind of communities. And they know, from this blog, they know us. And then I also wrote some blogs about, okay, what is stream processing and I have a blog called, I've got the title, but it was about the stream processing and the streaming database. It was more educational and people enjoyed reading the blog. And I think for that blog, it was also quite influential. Yeah. And after that, I regularly posted some so-called solid leadership blogs about okay, how I think about how the software will evolve, how the data infra will evolve. It was probably not about just about the RedingWave. It's more about okay, the entire data infra domain. And for us, well, it's more about okay, tell people we are here, right? And we actually have some thoughts about data infra, and we probably can help you to rethink your data infra. And that's how people know us, through all these kind of contents.
And I think we have this discussion with other folks in the past where, you know, content strategy is always very interesting because you can choose many different ways to do it. Some have more personality, some has more wider range of topics. You just really alluded to two posts that has nothing to do with RedingWave specific features or product, right? Writing in Rust or, you know, what is stream processing, right? It's related. To sure, but it's not like here's RedingWave, you know, syntax and you know how to do something very specific. Can you talk about like some of the what is so valuable of writing a wider range of topics? And is it worthwhile? Even you can get like 1 million views, but then not many of them are actual users. Does it have any pros and cons at all?
Yeah, I actually wrote a blog about the Rust working when we shifted from C++ to Rust, actually probably 2 years ago. And at the time, I didn't really have any idea about what kind of content we want to generate. We just want to kind of like, okay, show off, okay, we can do this. And the why we learned, we just share our opinions and we just share our experience. We didn't really know that it would have so many clicks and so many people are interested in this topic. We didn't really know that. But the interesting thing here that when we talk to, after publish that blog, when I talk to some people, they were just ask me about, are you the guy writing this blog about, changing from C++ to Rust? I will tell them, yes, I'm the guy. And so it's like, it's more about, I think it's more about awareness. They just feel that, you have the passion and you know something new and you are an interesting guy, right? And I probably want to share opinions with you. I think it's more about for awareness. But we didn't really publish a lot of this content. And actually after that, I posted another thing. It's about a vector database. It's about, I think a title was called, why shouldn't you invest in vector database? I mentioned, there are so many vector databases and it doesn't really make sense. And you should not invest in any vector databases. I do believe that's why this topic is kind of controversial and it's nothing to do with stream processing and with writing wave. But I think it's more for just sharing my own opinion. It's nothing to do with it's my own opinion. It's not the company's opinion. And I actually can make some new friends, right? And some people probably agree with me and some people will say, you are posting some bullshit, right? But I just don't really care. And I feel that it's just me and I just share my own opinion and the transparent opinion. People value that. People don't really like, you always say something new. OpenAI is great. ChatGPT is great. Vector database is great. People really want to see transparent opinion and don't try to always be controversial, right? So I'm not trying to always be controversial, but I'm trying to share my transparent opinion. I'm a person and I'm a real human being, right? Well, and you can talk with me about anything and I will not just sell a streaming database to you, right? So I think it's more about building trust. But again, I'm not a guy that just posted random blogs, right? Well, sometimes I also still post some blogs directly related to Writing Wave. And I think one of the most influential blogs is about, comparing Writing Wave and Flink. It was pretty popular blog in the Flink committee. And because of this, a lot of Flink guys come to me, saying that, you are posting some bullshit and you are doing something wrong. And I don't really care about those opinions. And because we are sharing what we learned, and you as a Flink users, definitely you do not need to agree with me. If you do not agree with me, you can show your evidence, right? Well, I'm open to any kind of debate, right? Or any kind of discussion, right? Well, it's a free open topic. You can share your opinions for free, right? Well, that's me. I'm not trying to hide anything. Yeah, and if you have the evidence, just show me, show the world, and how correct you are, right? Anyway, so I think that transparency is pretty important and I value that a lot. Yeah.
I love it. No, and I also think it's so important in this day and age to offer authenticity because it's just so noisy generally from like a content marketing perspective. I wanted to talk a bit about the Rising Wave project. So it seems like it was probably an obvious choice from a trust building perspective to open source it, but did you have a debate on whether or not this was something that made sense in open source? And what was kind of the way that you thought about, here's how managing a community, managing a project could be challenging for us?
Yeah, we definitely had a discussion about, whether we need to do the open source and what kind of license we want to choose, right? But I think it's just a pretty brief discussion and we immediately decided to open source and under Apache 2.0 license. We do not really want to think about any other licenses because the reason here is that, I think it's twofold. The first one is that there are already some pretty solid projects like, Apache Flink, Apache Spark Streaming, KSQDB, right? Well, and KSQDB probably is under Confluent license, but for Flink and Spark Streaming, they are both under Apache license. It doesn't really make sense for us to choose another license other than Apache, right? Well, definitely we can probably choose some MIT, but I think MIT is kind of crazy. Definitely, we can also choose that. But we think that Apache license is good enough for us. And the second thing here, which I firmly believe, is that open source doesn't really bring any value. I mean, definitely it brings a lot of value, but from the business perspective, it doesn't really bring any value, right? But people do not really pay for the open source software. They actually pay for the service, right? So no matter if I build a closed source system and it becomes successful, and the other day people will come to say, okay, I will build another open source writing wave alternative. Because, right, yeah, anyways, well, someone will do that. So why not just us, right? We just open source anything. And it can be free, but we can actually make money from the cloud service, right? Actually, there are another reason, which is actually kind of relevant to the slogan of our company. It's more about, we are thinking about democratizing stream processing. If you are a closed source system, then how you can democratize this domain, right? We think that Flink and the Spark Streaming is so difficult to use, and or even KCDB is so difficult to use, and think about who is using Flink and who is using Spark Streaming. I have to say that most of these companies are big companies, enterprises, mid-markets, not the SMBs. SMB is a title of this software, and they think that it's kind of tedious to use the data stream API or even use a SQL. It's not a conventional SQL. It's not a Postgres SQL. And people are tired of this. We should democratize it. And we should definitely bring value, true value, which is the software that is super easy to use to the users, and everyone can enjoy the software, the power of the modern software, right? And we make money by building the cloud service on top of it.
I want to actually go back to the streaming database concept a little bit. I know we touched on it a bit quickly, but I think we all heard of Flink, right? It's just almost like a V1-ish, maybe not V1, but it's an older generation of a stream processing systems. You already talked about your blog posts in the big data era, you know, why it done this way. I think most people in this industry already agree with that. Okay, this is hard to use and, you know, requires a big team, big companies. But then what everybody else does after this is very different. You know, there's more than one Flink alternatives have came up beyond the KSQL. There's other smaller companies, other projects, and they all look so different. Actually, I'm very curious like what your take is, because why do you want to build a streaming database? Definitely, it seems like you want to make it a Postgres SQL interface that can able to directly use SQL according to results. Means you have to actually persist the outputs, right? And you know, some new other Flink alternatives newer are just purely processing, right? And maybe talk about the choices you make a little bit. Like, why do you make those choices, and what trade-offs are you also giving up to when you make these specific choices?
So the first one is that I believe that Postgres is not just a database; it's the open standard. Okay, so if I'm a dictator, I would choose Postgres as the only single database people can use. or probably the open standard people can use. Because, the thing here is that every new database system is choosing Postgres as their protocol, right? WAR protocol, so that people can just write Postgres SQL and can just use Postgres Shell to talk with the other database system. So that's why we definitely decide to use Postgres WAR protocol. We have to be compatible with Postgres. That's number one. And number two is about the streaming database. The big data world was great, but the thing here is that it actually brings a lot of complexity to the world, which is kind of like I don't really like it and people don't really like it. People actually like simplicity. So what I believe is that, we should be as simple as possible. Instead of letting people to host a processing layer plus a storage layer, we should build something, that's kind of like all-in-one or unified system, right? To have both the processing capability as well as the storage capability and the serving capability, serving your queries, right? Serving capability. So that's the so-called all-in-one system or unified system, right? So that helps people to greatly reduce the complexity. Some people will say that, modern days, you probably don't need to maintain a lot of systems. You can just purchase, right? But the thing here is that if you purchase from AWS, you still need to purchase different functions, right? Okay, purchase Manager Flink, purchase your storage, probably DynamoDB, right? And the purchase probably a Redis. You have to purchase so many things. But for us, it's like, okay, all in one, just one single system to solve all your problems. But we're not trying to say that, okay, we just assemble everything together. What we're saying is that we just come back to the conventional way, which is the database way, which is the Postgres way. Postgres can do processing. Postgres can do storage. Postgres can serve ad hoc queries. And we also do the same thing. It's not, we are not trying to invent something new, but we changed the architecture, underlying architecture. We redo everything together. From the user perspective, they do not need to understand how we change the code. They do not need to understand, okay, the architecture. If they'd like, they definitely can check out source code. But well, from their perspective, they are just like, okay, talking to a Postgres. That's it. And that's why we decided to build such kind of streaming database instead of just a processing layer. And if you ask me about, okay, what kind of the trade-off we have made, I have to say that the only trade-off is the complexity. Yeah, building such kind of system is not easy, and it definitely takes up a pretty long time. And you mentioned that case. There are probably some other alternatives. I'm also aware of some alternative, I mean, Flink alternative or stream processing systems. But, well, I mean, this kind of system is lightweight and pretty simple. And we also pretty lightweight and pretty simple. But the thing here that what we found here that people, most of the users are probably not sales users. They probably just want to use a system to do a pretty simple thing. And it's more like a tooling. It's not a system. They are not sales, but we believe that what we are attracting is those sales users who really need to gain real-time insights from the streaming data. And that's why we built such kind of a streaming database.
And we want to talk a little bit about the Rising Wave paid offerings and at what point you decided to focus on those. And how do you kind of split your team's time as far as, okay, we want to evangelize, build out the project, build momentum there. And then we also want to be in like revenue generation mode. Like, how do you kind of figure out how to manage those two somewhat competing priorities?
Yeah, we started a company 3 years ago, and we started building the cloud platform, I think 1.5 years ago. And we launched the GA version middle of last year. And after that, we actually, between June to, I think, probably August, it was more about the testing mode, and it was more about the preview mode. But after that, we were more focused a lot on monetization. So what we think here is that you still need to have a solid project, I mean, open source project, before doing monetization, right? Well, otherwise, well, people do not really trust you. But we do believe that you have to think early. The thought is more about the cloud first. I mean, in the old days, probably we didn't really think like that. But nowadays, well, it's like whenever we introduce a new feature, we think about, okay, whether it can benefit our cloud. If it benefits our cloud, definitely we should do that. If it does not benefit our cloud, then we cannot say that, okay, we're not doing that. But we have to say that, okay, we need to think about its priority. Yeah, I can share that we actually have probably hundreds of user requested features to be done. But well, I mean, not all of them. I think probably a small portion just more about the deployment. It's more about the on-prem focus for features. But for such kind of features, we are trying to, if the feature is kind of simple, then we are trying to help. And we are trying to, okay, make a patch, right? And help the users as soon as possible. But if it's more about, okay, whether you can bring the, have integration with, I mean, I'm using, for example, some users saying, okay, we are using this cloud, which is not the mainstream cloud, which is not AWS, which is not GCP, and which is not Azure. We are using this cloud, and can we install their system in our cloud? Or probably they are using some on-prem cloud, right? Private cloud, right? Well, can we do that? We will tell them frankly that, okay, no, we are not trying to support that probably this month, but we probably can take a look whenever we are free. Or if you are interested in the cloud, then probably you can move to our cloud. But I have to say that, again, well, I mean, at least for the streaming processing domain, the one interesting thing here is that a lot of users are pretty serious users. Every single user is serious, but some users are dealing with pretty confidential data, fintech, right? Financial services and insurance companies. We actually have a bunch of financial companies using Rising Wave, and one of them is probably one of the world's largest trading firm. They are using Rising Wave, but they do not really want to use our cloud because of all kinds of privacy issues, right? So for these accounts, we actually do offer support or even offer on-prem. By the way, it's definitely a big account. We do not really do this for every single company. It doesn't really make sense. Well, if the contract size is just, okay, a few $100s or probably a few $1,000s, right? It doesn't really make sense. But if it's pretty big account, then we will probably try to do this for them. So I think the decision is kind of simple, always cloud first.
We talked to even founders before said that it was a mistake for them to release the cloud too late because they are catching way better feedback and things. So it definitely resonates a lot. So building such a hard product, but simplifying at the same time is a super large challenge for sure. And it's great to see you actually are getting larger and larger users. I know it's always hard to condense everything you learned into like a couple of things, but we also always like to try. What is the biggest learning you personally had, feel like is the most challenging for you? Because running a company, everything is new, right? But if there's like a top, let's pick two challenges you learned that was the hardest for you, what would that be?
The first one is definitely always thinking from the user's perspective. And the second one is probably more about the product development, which I'll talk about later. But the first one is about the SaaS. So I think the mistake I made in the early days was that, okay, I didn't really think about, okay, why people need this. I do think about, okay, why people need stream processing, why people need Flink or probably Spark Streaming, right? Well, people will say, okay, I will want to generate some real-time insights, and so I use Flink, and then probably I can use Riding Wave. But I think the better way to think about this is that when people start needing this, in most of the companies, it's more about user journey. You have to understand the user journey and when they need you. Think about the way if I create a new startup, right? Well, no matter what kind of startup it is, right? Well, the first system I probably will use is Postgres, right? And after that, probably purchase a data warehouse if my company is growing bigger enough. And then I have to think about, okay, when people really need to gain real-time insights from your streaming data. So is it before introducing a data warehouse or after introducing a new warehouse? Or is it because, well, okay, they introduced a new business or probably introduced a new product? In the early days, well, I didn't really think too much about that. So I think a lot of pitch was just useless. But well, when we started thinking more from the user's perspective and think about the user journey, then we were, understand, okay, at this time point, probably we should reach out to this guy because probably he is or she is interested in this topic. And she is probably, he or she are probably interested in this for the purchasing a new system, right? We think a lot about that. Yeah, that's the first lesson we learned and I personally learned. And the second one is more about the product development. The thing here that, okay, look, people do not really need a perfect product. People only need a product that can solve their problem. If your product is, let's say, 60 out of 100, but it solves the people's problem, solve the company's problem, then people will still use your system. You do not need to build a perfect product, right? It doesn't really make sense. And building a perfect product actually take a lot of time. Building a 6 scores, right? Well, 60 out of 100, well, it's kind of, yeah, it's hard, but it's simpler, right? But if you want to increase your score from, let's say, 80 to 90 or from 90 to 100, it will take a lot of time. People do not really need this kind of product. People just need a product that can, okay, barely solve their problem and they didn't really feel the pain, right? So I think we did make some mistakes about, okay, we overthought about the product. We over-engineered. I think that's definitely, if I can rebuild a system, if I can build a new startup, we probably will think about, okay, look, we should start something fast, right? Also, if I could talk more about the cloud, one thing we learned is that, okay, we actually also, for the cloud product, we also overthought a lot. If I could do the cloud product again, I would probably purchase a lot of SaaS product. I would not build everything from scratch because it's kind of tedious. All thinking at that time was about, okay, look, well, this SaaS product doesn't really make sense and it was not mature enough and it does not have this and that feature, right? And then we decided to build our own product, the cloud service. But when we started building a cloud service, we found that, okay, look, well, I have to build this and I have to build that. Okay, why I have to solve this problem? And there's another bug. We actually spent tons of time working on this kind of thing and fixing all kinds of bugs and it doesn't really make sense. So if I could do this again, then I would definitely not do this. Right? I would just purchase some SaaS, even if it's not perfect, but it can solve my problem. It can help me onboard the first few customers. I'm happy enough. And I would be super happy to go with the SaaS product, SaaS vendors, because well, they are probably also startups, right? That's the things I also learned. Yeah.
Well, that was an awesome set of advices to end on. Thank you so much for doing this podcast with us. We learned a ton, and I think our listeners will learn a ton too.
Thanks for having me here. Yeah, pretty interesting chat.